This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum. People of Earth, this is Matt from Infants on Thrones, and I'm here to make an announcement. My name is Matt, and I'm an atheist. If you're not new to this podcast, then this probably belongs on the front page of a little publication known as Stuff We Already Knew Weekly. And it's true I haven't been shy about talking about this fact on past episodes. Now this episode isn't going to be about what an atheist means to me or how I came to hold this view. It might be a good topic for a future episode, but still, I'm here to declare this fact without ambiguity and with clarity. I identify as an atheist, a skeptic, a person who doesn't believe that a god interacts with or influences people, a person that doesn't believe in supernatural events or phenomena. And when I disclose this to people, I'm often asked whether or not I've ever had any experiences that make me question my skeptical and atheistic view. This episode answers that question. My wife and I talk about and explore a couple of our sacred experiences, and we discuss how we reconcile them with our current non-believing viewpoint, and find out whether or not these sacred experiences are meaningful to us today. This is a topic I wanted to cover for a long time. So I want to bring my wife on to tell a shared story we have. One of those stories is just too sacred to tell. So this is my wife, Kristen.
Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm Matt's wife, and Matt rocks.
As I've been thinking about what experiences have I had in my life that are just too sacred to tell. The real special spiritual experiences that are those pearls that just can't be cast before swine of other people. And as I think about it, I have two or three that come to mind. I thought we'd talk about them and see if they really are that spiritual or that sacred. Sound good?
Perfect.
All right, so...
Do I have to agree with you?
About what?
I'm just kidding. There's sacredness.
Well, we can decide later. So we're in the car. That's why you hear some of the noise. So apologize for the ambient noise, the road noise, and maybe the air conditioning. But figure the way to break up a nice road trip was do a little episode for IoT.
Chatting together.
Yeah. The first story... I don't know if you know this story, Kristen.
Oh, dear.
But it's the story of how I ultimately decided that we should be married.
Well, I should know the story.
Well, you should know the story, but do you?
I think, yeah.
All right. So just a little...
I remember sitting... You had to go to the temple and think about me, and I was sitting in the visitor center wondering... Is he going to come and dump me, or is he going to want to be with me?
I did go to the temple. So
I went with you, I know.
Wait, so I remember going to the temple.
I wasn't endowed yet, so I had to stay, you know, with the kids in the visitor center.
Yeah, but this wasn't like a wedding or something.
You just brought me, and you were going into the temple.
So that's kind of weird. I don't remember doing that. Okay.
I went to Subway after. And I'll tell you that exciting trip, Subway experience after.
Okay, well, all right, we'll get there in a second, but first a little context.
Okay.
Let's talk about where we first met.
We met in high school.
No, not the pre-existence.
Did we meet in the pre-existence?
I've seen that smile somewhere before.
I've seen that smile somewhere before.
I've heard your voice before. It seems we've talked like this before.
No, not the pre-existence. High school.
High school.
So like eighth grade. Probably eighth grade.
You were eighth, I was ninth.
Yeah, I'm in eighth.
I robbed the cradle.
I was in eighth, you were in ninth, and we were in the same ward together. Mm-hmm. That's a yes.
That's true, yes, that's a yes. Am I on trial, or?
We dated for a very brief time when I was a freshman, you were a sophomore.
True.
But I couldn't date because I was 15, you were 16.
Yes.
And so we broke up so that you could go date.
Well, yeah, I wanted to go on a date and told you that I still really liked you. I just wanted to go on a date because I turned 16.
Right. I think we call that having your cake and eating it, too.
Yes. And you dumped me.
Or we were friends through high school, never really hooked back up until after my mission. And that's, the mission story, that's a mini-sode all in and of itself.
Yes.
We actually already released this story as an episode. If you haven't heard it, you can find it on our website from June 9th, 2014. Go ahead. We'll wait. Now that you're caught up, we'll continue. But needless to say, when I get off my mission, we didn't date beforehand. We didn't date beforehand, but we had known each other for 8 years.
Yes, but you, before your mission, you took me out and planted the seed that I should,
What?
Not wait for you
to start
dating, but, well, that too. But you kind of were like, don't forget me.
Well, that's a pretty good move.
Really good move. I didn't forget you. But I was like, damn you.
But you were dating some other dude.
Yeah, I was dating.
Yeah. But we weren't together.
No, didn't even kiss.
Yeah, you weren't like waiting for me or anything like that on my mission.
Nope.
So I get back and very quickly we hook up.
Very quickly.
Like I'm the day after I get back from my mission.
Well, you were home probably 2 or 3 days and I called you because I just took up. I got home from BYU. I just graduated and came home for the summer.
All right, so we hook up. That is, we meet up like around the first day that I get back, or the next within a week of me being home.
I was very brave and called you, and my mom said I was horny because I was calling you. Please edit that up. Please edit that up.
No, that's staying in.
That sounds terrible.
Were you horny?
No, I didn't even know what horny was back then. I was a perfect Mormon. I just wanted to see you.
Okay.
So and, was I horny? Maybe.
And see if there might be something there.
Yes.
Okay. So within a week of me getting home, we start dating. And within a month.
Within one night, we were making out.
Well, that's true. Well, of course, you were horny.
Shut up. Just so you all know, that should have been edited out.
All right. So within a month, though, in true Mormon fashion, there's no way we could just date, right? We can't just figure things out on our own. We've got some decisions to make.
Yep, after 3 weeks.
We got to know whether or not we're getting married.
Yeah.
So what did any good Mormon boy return missionary do in order to find out if he's supposed to get married to this woman?
Not follow his heart, but go to the temple.
That's right. Not do pros and cons.
Yep.
Not talk to, well, I did talk to friends and family.
Did they tell you to dump me?
One person said, says, I always think maybe there's something better out there, but he also has never been married. So that's what made me realize maybe not follow his advice. So I go to the temple, man, and because that's the answer to everything. All I need to do is go to the temple, pray about it. And I'll get my answer of whether or not I'm supposed to marry you, whether or not you are my soulmate.
Yes.
You know what Minchin says?
Magic. What is Minchin's?
Well,
If I didn't have you to share my sighs and to kiss me and dry my tears when I cry, will I really think that I would have somebody else? If I didn't have you, someone else would do. Your love is one in a million. You couldn't buy it at any price. But of the 9.99900,000 other possible loves, statistically, some of them would be equally nice. Or maybe not as nice, but say smarter than you, or dumber but better at sport, or tracing, I'm just saying I think that I would probably have somebody else. Yeah.
But we didn't think like that back then.
No way.
It wasn't like if you pass this up, whatever was set up in the eternities is ruined, right?
Yeah, there's only one person for you, and the Lord will tell you who it is. I mean, the Spirit, the Holy Ghost.
Yes, the Lord through the Holy Ghost. Yeah. So I go to the temple, and I sit through the endowment, and I can... You just groan?
Well, how can you think when you're doing all these signs and changing your robe 14 times? But anyways...
Well, I'm channeling what you're supposed to channel in the temple. I'm finding that sweet spot, that place. Yeah, that sweet spot of the Spirit.
Sweet spot. Waiting for you in the visitor center.
So, wait, let me go back to this. So, did you came with me? We came in the same car to the temple?
Yes.
And you knew why I was going to the temple?
Yes.
What I told you? Listen, Kristen, I'm going to the temple to find out whether or not we're supposed to be married.
Well, I don't think you said it that way. I think you just... We were, I don't remember, we were, dating and getting serious and, in 3 weeks, getting very serious. And I don't know, you just went to the temple and, wanted to pray and think about our relationship.
And I told you that?
Yeah, because I was nervous the whole time.
That's weird. Sorry about that.
It's all right. I liked you.
I mean, but it's a little, douchey to be like, listen, baby, of course you want to be with me, but now I got to go to the temple to see if God wants me to be with you.
I know, and there was also a hang-up because I did have a missionary, so there was lots of issues that we can later discuss.
Well, that's a whole nother episode.
That is, and it's a good one. But there was a lot of, remember, there was, I think that's why you had all these questions too, and am I the right one? Because of that as well.
And I'm just home off my mission. Do I really want to jump into this so quickly? Am I ready to do that? I know that was going on in my mind.
Yeah, and shouldn't I be dating a whole bunch of girls and, getting it on?
Well, I don't know about getting it on, but...
In your Mormon way. Matt was perfect when he got home.
Yeah, that's true. So this is a serious relationship.
I know that's hard for all of you to believe, but Matt was perfect when he got home. He would not break any rules.
Yeah. You're not being sarcastic either.
No, not at all. Like, I wanted you to not be perfect. I tried. Okay,
sorry. I know. It's like, and everyone's thinking, why did you have to go to the temple? That's a no-brainer.
What?
If you were trying to get me to be bad,
I know.
Why should I have gone to the temple? Maybe that was it. Maybe it was like, maybe she's not worthy.
Oh my gosh, I was a perfect Mormon girl.
That's not true. I know, I did. So I go to the temple, and I remember sitting in the temple and thinking about being married. Kind of, you were taught, I was always taught as a, as a missionary to have the answer and then ask for confirmation. So have a decision made and then ask for confirmation. While I'm sitting in the temple, I remember saying, I've made the decision, I'm going to marry her. Is this the right thing to do? And very vividly, what I remember is seeing your face in, I kind of laugh at myself now to think about it, but it's true, in the temple clothes and with the veil, not covered, but the veil up.
That is hot. I'm in a bar. You never told me this.
I didn't.
So how did I look?
Pretty much how you did in temple clothes. So I see you in temple clothes, really smiling and happy, and I just felt...
Like a big marshmallow with a green trim?
I just remember it was about from the shoulders up, okay. So your face. And you were really happy, and I was really happy, and I just had this real peace. I was like, that's it. That's my answer. Of course we're supposed to get married.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
That's really adorable.
I mean, this is sacred stuff. Don't condescend me.
I feel the Spirit.
Okay. No, but I really remember feeling that strongly. And then I come out and I'm prepared when we walk out of the doors of the temple, knowing that you're there, which again, sorry about that. That was a little weird.
I know. Maybe I didn't know. Maybe I just knew you were going to the temple. And I didn't know that you were questioning whether we should marry or not. But But I remember just feeling kind of angst while I was waiting for you.
Okay.
So, anyways.
So I remember thinking, this is as much an answer to a prayer as I've ever gotten. And it happened in the temple, so there's no way to question it. And so then I came out, and I'm planning on dropping to a knee immediately.
Aww.
And saying, you know, will you marry me?
Aww.
And that's what happened, right?
That is not what happened. No. We hugged, and you looked unsure. And then you took me to Subway.
All right, so I come out prepared to propose, and immediately nothing, when I leave the temple, nothing but doubt enters my mind. Like, this is not right. This is horrible.
Is it because he saw me?
Well, no, I don't know what it, I can't explain what it was. Like, all I can say is my experience was the reality of the situation just punched me in the face. Like, what are you doing? And all the practical thing that was going on, if you've only been dating for 3 weeks, you've barely been home a month, all these things, you're not even in school yet, you don't have a job, all the just realities and the practical things are coming to my mind. And so I don't even think
we'd been dating for 3 weeks at this point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we had.
Well, I think we were engaged at 3 weeks.
Ugh.
I think this was like 1.5 or 2 weeks.
You might be right.
Yeah, I think I am, because at 3 weeks we were engaged.
No, we got engaged a month after.
Uh-huh. Okay, then this is maybe, you're right, then this is about 3 weeks.
So yeah, this is about 2 weeks or 3 weeks after I get home.
Ugh.
It's like an eternity, really.
Gosh, we were crazy.
Yeah.
And I almost just said the F word, but I'm trying to be a classy lady.
So I come out and I'm like, no, this is not the right thing. This is a horrible idea. And so I don't propose. And so what happens at Subway? Because this is something I don't really remember. We go to Subway to have lunch.
Yeah.
What happens?
You don't remember this?
Oh. No.
Well, I could tell when you came out of the temple that you just didn't look happy. So we're sitting, eating, and you pretty much tell me, I can't keep dating just you. I gotta date around. So my thought was, well, then we're gonna just be over because I have a missionary coming home, so I gotta decide something. So I guess, yeah, I had a missionary coming home a month later, and I knew I wanted to marry you. But I also knew that if you didn't want to marry me, then I was just going to go back to Utah and get married and teach up there. So to me, you broke my heart because I was like, oh, I guess now I just have to marry my missionary who I didn't want to marry. So Subway, yeah, that sucked.
So I told you I wanted to date other girls at Subway.
Yeah, and still date me, but just, you know, date around, and maybe you weren't sure if I was the right, you know, the one. You have to date.
You know, in retrospect, that really sounds like the more responsible choice.
Totally. And I still feel bad that you didn't get to date around, and because that really was all me being selfish of, well, I have to hurry and decide because I want you, but I'm 21, which is old for Mormons not to be married.
You're an old maid at that point.
Yeah, which sounds ridiculous now. I could have waited till I was 30 and I should have dated around too, but I was an old maid. I had just graduated from BYU. I had a teaching job in Utah to go back to, and that was selfish of me. I needed to know, I want you, Matt, but if you're not going to take me, then I have things that I have to go back to. So it was very selfish. I feel bad.
Right. So that was...
I'm sorry.
So that was it. But we had these time... We had these legitimate time and outside pressures that were coming on. You had to make a decision if we were going to be together, either you had to stay in Arizona or I had to go up to Utah. So we did have to make some real drastic life decisions. And so it couldn't just be like we were floating through just dating, seeing what was going on.
It's sad. And it's also, I feel like the church, growing up in the church and not being married at 21 was, I mean, it sounds ridiculous now, but like I said, just that pressure though of, well, then I might not get married. I'm going to be an old maid if I don't take either you or this missionary that's coming home and ready to propose to me. So you just said this was legitimate concern. Not really, but in the church, it totally is.
So that was, so to end the story and why this was such a spiritual and sacred story and why this is something I cling to for a number of years. So then I'm talking to my dad and telling him about what happened and why we're kind of splitting up. And my dad, you got to know my dad. He's just not a real magical thinking type guy. Total just Mr. Gruff, down to earth, practical, just no bullshit kind of guy. I've never heard the guy really bear his testimony, let alone say anything, about, any type of magical thinking. And so I'm talking to him about it, and he says, well, that's your answer. You came out of the temple and you were just accosted by the devil. He said you were safe in the temple, and so you got your answer. And when you walked out of the temple, you were immediately bombarded by Satan. And so all the thoughts you had out of the temple, those are from Satan. That's what he tells me. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my gosh, it really is that simple. You're so right. And then as a form of just kind of bolstering that position, my dad tells me, and you should know that months ago, before I had before I even knew that Kristen was in the picture, he had a dream that we were getting married. Did you know that?
Yeah, you told me that after. Awesome.
And that was
just
crazy to me to hear my dad say something like that. That was my spiritual experience, a confirmation about the temple, confirmation about that God cares about who we marry specifically, and confirmation that, if you go to the temple and ask earnestly, that you'll get the answer that you want. And so real soon after that, I made the commitment, and it was actually probably within a couple of days of talking to my dad, got a ring, and we were engaged.
Spoiler alert, we got married. And we're pretty damn happy.
I'm glad. I'm pretty damn happy, so I know. So
you're adorable.
So, but forever, that was my most spiritual experience and my most sacred experience, something that I wouldn't share with anyone. And yet now I've shared this with
the world.
Dozens and dozens of people that listen to the Infants on Thrones.
Like I said, the world. Everyone who matters. And it's funny because the whole time, you were going through all of this spiritual, trauma / whatever this spiritual journey was for you. I was like, I came home, saw you, and I was like, I want to marry Matt. I kind of tried to pray about it and was like, meh, I'm not really feeling, all I know is I want to marry Matt.
So that was the most significant and special and sacred spiritual experience before, except for two years later. And this one is something we both experienced.
Tori.
Related to Tori. Yes.
This is my, and this would be my very first.
What?
This one is my very first spiritual experience. Like the only time I can say that I've gotten an answer to a prayer. This experience that we're going to share.
All right. So you want to set the stage?
Sure. Okay, so Matt, we've been married a year and a half, 2 years, a year and a half. Matt had the chance to work for an adoption agency and was facilitating adoptions out of the Marshall Islands. And we had the chance to go together. Matt was going with his partner adoption agency partner to help about 10 families adopt. And it was summer and I wasn't, I don't teach in the summer. So I decided to go with them.
Well, and we had no kids.
We just started saying, let's try to have a baby.
Yeah.
Cause we're Mormon and we've only been married a year and a half. So of course, what's the next step? Have a baby.
Well, we waited a long time, a good year and a half.
Yeah. And it was almost two years.
Yeah. And we had just stopped using any form of birth control and decided we're going to start having a family.
Okay, so we're in the Marshall Islands, and one of the first places we go to, I think it was the first day, we go to a family that Matt was very close with on his mission, and there was a 10-year-old girl that they wanted to place with a family. So we get there, and we're taking pictures of the family and the little girl. And I just kind of had the whole overwhelming feeling of we're supposed to do something. Maybe we're supposed to take this girl home, adopt her. And I kept thinking to myself, this is crazy. Was I 23? I'm 23, and she's 10, and I teach fourth grade, which is 10-year-old. So it was just this feeling of maybe we're supposed to do something, but this is crazy. So we get in the car, Matt and I, we're leaving, and I told Matt this, that I just have this feeling, and what did you say?
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, Matt had the same feeling, and we were like, this is crazy. So over the next 8 days, the rest of 8 days that we're there, we're talking about this and praying about this, and we both feel like we're supposed to adopt this little girl, but it just still doesn't feel right when we're talking about it. So I think it was the eighth night, right? We were there 10 days, so that we had another day still, a day and a half. We are on our knees praying that night, as, perfect little Mormon couples do.
We were doing that back then.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're doing that normally, but here we're doing it for a purpose. So, no, but the same technique of asking for something after you've made the decision and asking just for confirmation.
So, we decided we're going to go. We've decided, okay, Matt, we're going to adopt this little 10-year-old, and we can still have, kids of our own because she can help babysit. And I mean, this would make sense for our family, even though it's crazy. So we start our prayer and, Heavenly Father, please help us to know if this is the right decision.
We've made this decision. Made this decision.
Help us to know if this confirm
that it's right. And if it's not right, let us know.
And, of course, Matt's doing the praying because I don't know how to pray.
Priesthood holder, bitches.
Yes, priesthood holder. So as soon as we say amen, Paul, which is our best friend and Matt's adoption partner, walks in the hotel room and says, Cynthia wants you to take Tori home, or Torica home. And Torica is Cynthia's 18-month-old little girl who'd been sick since she'd been born. She had pneumonia problems, bronchitis, and they knew that she had a heart murmur. So Paul says this, and both Matt and I feel this overwhelming answer, like, that's who we're supposed to take home. We knew we were supposed to take somebody home. It's Torica. And it was like this overwhelming, this is it. This was our answer to our prayer. We just said amen, and Heavenly Father just opened the doors, and our prayers have been answered.
Right, and I can't, never in my life has anything been more clearly correct.
And this was like my first experience of, oh my gosh, my prayer was answered. This is the Lord speaking to me. So, of course, the next day we go and talk to Cynthia, and we then go to court and get out, all the paperwork done. And we get home. Well,
yeah. So we adopt her.
Yeah. We got guardianship.
It doesn't matter. We adopt her. We'll just streamline this.
Okay.
We don't need every detail. This will be a 3-hour podcast. Adopt her.
I love your guts.
And we get home and we go to the doctor beforehand, but while we're on the island and we know these things, that she has a heart murmur. Yeah, she just has a heart murmur. That's what we know. So we get to the doctor immediately when we get home within a week, and we learn that she has a hole in her heart, that she has a membrane kind of attached to the heart that's potentially causing problems.
In one of the atriums.
Yeah, in one of the atriums that's potentially causing problems. And then she
could destroy a valve.
And then she has a... I forget the
technical term.
An enlarged heart and a ductus.
Ductus arteriosus.
Which is a connection between the aorta and the pulmonary artery that causes blood to constantly kind of be going to a place where it shouldn't, and it forces the heart to pump harder than it otherwise should have, or should, which is what gives the enlarged heart.
And the lungs were enlarged, and the lungs were becoming muscularized because the lungs are working so hard to push that extra blood back out to the rest of the body.
Right. And that's why that was the cause for all these pneumonias and the lung and the respiratory problems she had had all her lives and her hospitalizations. And she was, when we got her, she was 18 months and 17 pounds. Looked like a little Cupid doll walking around with hair down to her butt.
So we get ready for surgery. They have to do surgery. And we get ready for surgery. And the surgeon at one of the appointments said, I don't know, how did you guys know to bring her back to America? She would not have made it a year and a half. She would have died.
Right. Then what the doctor said is, he asked, how did you know to get her now? And we said, we don't understand what you're talking about. He said, this is one of the easiest procedures, one of the easiest things to fix, but it's also one of the most deadly, one of the most dangerous, because if you don't, there's a window in which you can fix this. And if you don't fix it in this window, you're done. There's nothing that can repair it. That it gets to the point where the heart becomes so muscularized that it becomes, you're basically getting into perpetual hypertension and the heart gives out. So they said after about 3 years old, ideal, you can't, and you also can't do it when they're infants. So they have to be a little older. So sometime between like 1 and 3, there's about a 2 year window, if I remember right, he said. And he said, how did you know to do that? And we said we didn't. It was just, it was...
a miracle.
Yeah, it was a miracle.
Truly a miracle.
So she has her surgery, and it was horrible. Any parent who's had to have a kid go through surgery, heart surgery and those things, it's miserable.
Oh, and I was 6 months pregnant. We forgot to add that in as when I got home, I was pregnant. So by the time she's getting the surgery, I'm 6 months pregnant. I'm nervous wreck.
Which was another answer, because had we known that we were pregnant when we went out there, and it turned out that you were barely pregnant when we were out there.
I was sick in the Marshalls, but I thought I had an amoeba. I did.
When we decided to adopt her, we were pregnant, not knowing we were pregnant. And we always said, had we known that we were pregnant, there's no way we would have adopted her. So again, that was just more confirmation bias. Is that God is controlling this from beginning to end.
Yes.
So we go through surgery, and it's a miserable experience. You have your daughter in hooked up to an incubator or a breathing, she's on a breathing tube, and she's just hooked up to things, and you can't pick her up and comfort her, and she's in there just moaning in pain, it
you
seems
just touch
like.
Touch her arm, because there were so many wires.
Yeah, we I'd hover over her, trying to wrap her up as best you can, but you can't really get into the crib, the little bed that she's in. But I remember being woken up at about 2 a.m. by the doctor, and he's just really agitated. He's just kind of, agitated isn't the right word, he's excited.
Yeah, excited.
And he says, come here, you've got to see this. And he pulls me into the other room, and he shows me an x-ray of her heart. And this is about, within 6 hours of the surgery. And he puts one x-ray of her heart and then another x-ray. And he says, this x-ray here is pre-op. And then he points the other one and he says, this is her now. We just took it. We just took this image just a couple minutes ago. And he said I have never in the 20 years of a surgeon seen a reaction, to surgery this quick. He said within 6 hours, her heart is basically normal.
Normal size.
Yeah, the normal size. He said, I've never seen a reaction to this surgery like this before. I mean, like I said, he's really excited and really worked up.
And the hole closed on its own. We forgot that. The hole closed on its own, and the doctor had never seen that either. He's like, they usually, at this age, they close up before a year, I think, but at this age, usually those have to be fixed, or they live with a hole in their heart. Remember that?
I don't remember that, but yeah. I'll take your word for it. And then the membrane...
I'm glad you trust me.
Then the membrane was there, but they said they'll just monitor that, and as long as it doesn't grow, and at this point, she's 17, and everything's been fine.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that was our miracle. We knew the answer to all those questions. Why did we get her? And how did this surgery take in this way?
And her life was saved. How did her mom even know, her birth mother know to even give her up? She loved her. And she was a good mom and could provide for her. But she just knew, you know, she didn't give up any of her other babies. But she knew that Tori needed to come home with us.
Right. So there's only one possible answer to this. Right? God.
God.
Right?
Right. Yes. Now.
Now is a true miracle. So that was our that is our sacred, sacred experience. So how do we reconcile our belief now? Well, let me ask you. So what is your take on that? We've told this story. We've shared this story together. I mean, it's been not just an important story to us, but it's been a bonding story for us and our family.
Yeah.
Tori is our little miracle. And my parents and my family all basically recognize her as being a little miracle.
This, remember, is the only spiritual experience that I've really ever had. And I grew up good little Mormon girl that would read the Book of Mormon and pray and try to get that answer of, is this true or not? Never got it. I remember sitting in Young Women's for years and years learning, you know, you're supposed to go to the Heavenly Father and you'll feel this burning in your bosom. And I would try to practice and practice and practice praying and getting answers, and I never got one. So this, to me, was my first huge, like, God is real, you know, there are miracles. So even now when we were going through, you know, kind of leaving the church and that whole... our testimonies, you know, nothing's really true anymore, that this one experience was the only thing that I kept telling myself, God is real. There's something. I can't say that it's not all true because this happened and that Tori's my miracle. So it's taken me years to really, I don't really know. How do I say this? So I guess it's taken me years to realize that, and I'm going to use Matt's term for this, that she's a happy coincidence. This was just one of those, we're lucky we were there at the right time. We're lucky that Matt had a great relationship with Sylvia and her family. You know, it's just, I feel lucky that I get to be her mom and that she's in my family. I don't know really if I believe anymore that this was from God, but it is still my one hang-up of maybe there's something.
So it's the one thing that kept you thinking that maybe God exists and yes. God's real. Yes. Not just that God's real, but that God answers prayers.
Yes.
But
that's the only thing that I can think of in my life.
But it had nothing to do with Mormonism.
No. No, no, no. I don't even relate this to Mormonism at all. This is just to my, do I believe in God or not?
So as an atheist, I look back on this experience because as we've just related, I mean, that's really how it happened. And that's those are the only things you can conclude, or at the time you can only conclude. But yeah, what I've come to is when it comes to, well, let me do this. What I've come to think about and come to realize is, yeah, good things do sometimes happen. Just like bad things really do happen. Sometimes bad things conspire to make tragedies happen. There are horrible stories there that one small thing could be altered or changed, and absolute destruction and chaos and pain and misery results from one small little thing or a couple things converging together to create that incident. And that's no miracle when that happens. Sometimes shit just happens. And similarly, when good things happen, it's not a miracle. It's just that. It's the phrase that I always use. It's a happy coincidence. There are sad coincidences, and there are miserable coincidences, and there are happy coincidences. And the fact that this resulted in something really, really special and really, really good, that we were able to have a relationship with this little girl, is not something to be, poo-pooed or to look down and be like, oh, whatever, it's no small thing. No, it is. It's an amazing thing. It's a beautiful thing. It is a, it is something to be celebrated, but it's not a magical thing. It's not a supernatural thing.
Sorry for interrupting, but Kristen and I are actually getting ready to get into some pretty sacred ground. And before we get there, I wanted to add something from the philosopher Tim Minchin. He says things better than I ever could hope to. You'll notice this is the second Tim Minchin reference in this episode. If you're already a fan, you'll appreciate this. If not, do yourself a favor. Take a Sunday afternoon with just you, your favorite beverage, and YouTube, and watch everything you can from Tim. You know what? Forget the beverage. You'll end up making a mess. Anyway, Minchin sums up what I'm trying to say here beautifully towards the end of his 9-minute beat poem titled Storm.
Isn't this enough? Just this world? Just this beautiful, complex, wonderfully unfathomable, natural world? How does it so fail to hold our attention that we have to diminish it with the invention of cheap man-made myths and monsters? If you're so into your Shakespeare, lend me your ear. To gild refined gold, to paint the lily, to throw perfume on the violet, it's just fucking silly. Or something like that. Or what about Satchmo?
I'll see trees of green, red roses too,
and fine, if you wish to glorify Krishna and Vishnu in a post-colonial, condescending, bottled up and labeled kind of way, then whatever, that's okay. But here's what gives me a hard on. I am a tiny, insignificant, ignorant bit of carbon. I have one life, and it is short and unimportant. But thanks to recent scientific advances, I get to live twice as long as my great-great-great-great-uncles and aunties. Twice as long to live this life of mine. Twice as long to love this wife of mine.
We've been talking as, we've lost people in our lives this last year. How to make meaning with life and meaning with relationships. And the thing that I've jumped to and that we keep bringing up is a quote from Carl Sagan's wife.
Sorry, I'm crying.
You're crying?
Yeah.
You're crying because of... So you're feeling the spirit, or
because I just lost my mom, and I love this. What you're going to say?
This is something that Carl Sagan's wife said after Carl died.
When my husband died, because he was so famous and known for not being a believer, many people would come up to me. It still sometimes happens, and ask me if Carl changed at the end and converted to a belief in an afterlife. They also frequently ask me if I think I will see him again. Carl faced his death with unflagging courage and never sought refuge in illusions. The tragedy was that we knew we would never see each other again. I don't ever expect to be reunited with Carl, but the great thing is that when we were together for nearly 20 years, we lived with a vivid appreciation of how brief and precious life is. We never trivialized the meaning of death by pretending it was anything other than a final parting. Every single moment that we were alive and we were together was miraculous. Not miraculous in the sense of inexplicable or supernatural. We knew we were beneficiaries of chance, that pure chance could be so generous and so kind. That we could find each other, as Carl wrote so beautifully, in the cosmos. you know, in the vastness of space and the immensity of time, that we could be together for 20 years. That is something which sustains me, and it's much more meaningful. The way he treated me and the way I treated him, the way we took care of each other and our family while he lived, that is so much more important than the idea I will see him someday. I don't think I'll ever see Carl again, but I saw him. We saw each other. We found each other in the cosmos, and that was wonderful.
I find that inspiring. I find that touching. I find that uplifting.
When my mom was passing away, Matt had read this quote to me on the way up to say goodbye to my mom. And sorry, I'm emotional, but my brothers and sisters, all four of them, are very active in the church and just, we were all together at my mom's bedside when she was passing, and all four of them kept talking about, you know, the veil opening and my mom, you know, being greeted on the other side, and we're going to see her again. And it was just like they were going through these motions of all of these things that we've been raised to hear, and death is, it's fine, we're going to see her again, and this is sad. And I remember just thinking over and over again in my head this quote of, I'm so lucky that I got to know her and that she was my mom, and none of that mattered. But it kind of drove me crazy in a way because of almost their lack of just love and just those final minutes with my mom, because they're going to see her again. It's all, you know, bye mom. And I don't mean, I'm trying not to mean this in a bad way because it's been devastating for all of us, but I just, in those final moments, I didn't believe that anymore. This was it. I was saying goodbye to my mom forever. And I just felt so lucky that I got to know her and that she was mine.
Yeah.
Now don't make my siblings sound
bad. No, I'm not going to say anything about your siblings. When we're talking about spiritual experience, when we talk about sacred experiences, these aren't miracles. These aren't supernatural things that are happening. These are, as Sagan's wife said, chance being kind. And in so many places, when chance is cruel and chance destroys, it's good to celebrate and recognize the beauty of personal relationships and when chance can be so kind. And these two spiritual experiences that I always clung to and that were so sacred that I couldn't share with anybody, these are things that I should shout from the rooftops and say, personal relationships matter. Connections with other people matter. These are great, whether they be friendships, whether they be parent-child relationships, whether they be boyfriend-girlfriend, you know, spouse, whatever personal relationship, to connect with somebody in the vastness of space and the immensity of time, that is something that's special and something that should be celebrated. But it's not supernatural. Those are my spiritual experiences, and I still cling to them. I just recognize them for what they are, truly happy coincidences.
Love it. I agree. I wanted to say that I'm lucky I found you in the cosmos.
We're having fun on this little ride that we have on this. The pale blue dot spinning around is... I love you.
I love you.
I'm going to do you.
Good. Anyone for the closing prayer?
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.